dementia, comedy, and letting yourself go in Byron Bay. G'day, my name's Dino Power, and welcome to the Gigglefest edition of the TEDx Byron Bay podcast. Today we're talking to comedian Mandy Nolan, and she's taking comedy to a whole new level. It's going to blow your mind, I'm sure. This is podcast 6 in a series leading up to the TEDx Byron Bay conference, the first one. It's going to be held on the 31st of July 2010. Now, if you're familiar with the TED conference, you'll probably have a bit of an inkling about what TEDx might be all about. If you're not, the TED conference was founded in California, and it was founded by a non-for-profit who aimed to bring together the best minds from technology, entertainment, and design, and to create an atmosphere where people felt empowered to explore ideas and their power and their ability to transform the world. A few years ago, TED licensed the TEDx concept, which basically allows for independently organized events with a TED-like experience to happen all over the world. Now, on the 31st of July, we're having our very own TEDx experience here in Byron Bay. And one of our guests, one of our speakers, will be Mandy Nolan. Now, Mandy's a local comic. She has performed stand-up comedy for quite some time herself. She's taught some of Australia's leading stand-up comedians, and now she's taking comedy to a whole new level. Mandy, thanks very much for joining us. You're carrying the locals flag. So what's a favourite Byron Bay experience for you?
I think when I arrived here, that would be, you know, for me, one of my favourite moments. I had been on a bus trip from Sydney, and it had been like one of those 12-hour trips where you stop at every service station to watch the bus driver eat. And and then I was absolutely exhausted, and, you know, I'd left a relationship. I was all emotional. I think I'd cried the whole way. I probably looked like I had a problem as well. I walked up to the beach because I thought that's the first thing I wanted to do. And there was a kite flying festival. Now they have it at Brunswick, but it was the one year that they happened to have it here. So there was like 1,000 kites, and it was just beautiful. I sat on the beach. Someone gave me a cup of tea, and later that day I fell asleep, you know, after having a swim and a bit of a sunbake.
As you do.
This is the, yeah, pre-melanoma. Pre-melanoma time. This is when we were just working on them 10, 15 years ago. And I heard this noise above me, and there was this guy in a hang glider, and he sort of got off a bit off track. I think he was just like a learner hang glider. He was trying to land. It was like probably, you know, 2 or 3 metres above me, that little metal bar that they hang on to, looking for somewhere to land. And he was very cute. So I was going, it's fine, you can land on me, I'm free. That's free, I'm single. You can land. Anyway, he crashed about 10 metres away. And I ended up marrying him, having 10 children. No! That's a lie. But I just thought, what a kooky place. I've never been anywhere someone almost lands on you in a hang glider. So
absolutely.
I stayed. It was literally colourful.
And we're all the more richer for it. Now, Mandy, you're not working on one book, but 2 books at the moment. You're doing comedy gigs all over the place. You are well known for teaching a lot of Australia's leading comedians how to do stand-up. But, you know, that wasn't always the case for you. So what's give us a little sense of your backstory.
I'm an accidental comedian. I never intended to be a stand-up comic. I wanted to be something much more impressive than I actually am. So I'm not a comic, but I can always do it. And I never realised, I suppose, how many areas that it lends itself to. Once you understand the nuts and bolts of being a stand-up comic, it can apply it to a lot of disciplines involving public speaking and writing.
Yeah.
So I've performed, you know, and then I got into teaching because I thought, wow, I want to be a comic, but I don't want to be traveling, you know, all around the country. I want to have a family, and I don't want, you know, when you're an entertainer and you're a performer, you've got to be prepared to leave your children. And that might be okay for men. I'm just joking. But it's hard, you know, and I never wanted to do that. So I thought, well, here I am in a regional setting. I have to I have to create my own kind of industry, really. So I thought, well, if I get comics in from out of town, I work here as well, I just have to make new comics. So I thought, I'll just start teaching, because that's a pretty good way of actually doing it. And in doing that, you create an industry, you create, you know, in the last 15 years, I'd say I've created quite a good regional scene. I've set up a festival here a few years ago, about to start a new one, a comedy festival. I've taught over 1,000 people. It's quite contagious, and everyone wants a piece of it. I've also worked out that comedy is also good for therapy as well. So, you know, I've worked with people with mental health issues. I'm now doing comedy, a thing called Stand Up for Dementia. So it's all about broadening rather than, you know, I am the ultimate multitasker. You know, heaps of kids, I'll be washing up with one hand and writing with the other. And I've sort of applied that to my career to make it viable and to make it exciting for myself. And I love the challenge, you know, of never quite knowing how I'm going to get through the next project. And then I do, and I went, I don't know how I did that, but it happened. So that's kind of how I am. I fly by the seat of my pants all the time. I'm a great believer in for my career and how I've done it, is that I've always said yes to virtually everything, and then I work out how I'm going to do it later. And that's kind of my sort of philosophy of, you know, and if you don't, look, if you make a big mistake, you know, for me, mistakes are just more material. You know, if my life went perfectly, I'd have no inspiration. Someone said me today, they did an article on me in the Tweed News, and the poor journalist sent me this thing saying, I'm terribly sorry, there's been a misprint in this 2-page feature. It talked about when my father died, and it had me saying, after my father died, it was a lot easier for my mother. And I said, it was a lot, you know, it was not a lot easier. But she felt terrible. I just emailed her back and said, oh, God, it's probably right. He was a difficult man. It probably was easier for her. But don't worry about it. It's funny. It makes me sound callous and cruel. So, but, you know, at the end of the day, mistakes are good.
Yeah. Well,
unless you're, you know, in charge of a red button that, you know, involves nuclear.
That probably wouldn't be so good.
Yeah, and then mistakes aren't such a good thing.
So you talked about teaching people comedy. Can you teach anyone to be funny?
You can teach anyone to, the difference is, if some, you know, I believe 99% of people have a sense of humour, and there's 1% that just can't be helped. They don't know. They just don't have any sense of humour. I cannot teach them to be funny. They are never funny because they don't get it. Everyone else I can teach a format to create, to show them how to find their voice comically, and it will be completely different to the person next to them. When I first started, I made them all sound like me, which was a little unnerving in a 50-year-old man. So now I've worked out how to bring out, you know, everyone's comic voice. And for those people that can't, you know, get it, it's just, you know, they can watch. Yeah, you know, some people just don't get, you know, there are the small amount that you can't make people funny.
Yes.
Because people have their own sense of humour.
Right.
So, you know, I can just work with what's there.
And you teach public speakers to use comedy?
Is it
a powerful tool for public speaking?
I think it's really powerful because I think it's about being engaging. And comics know, like, if you're not engaging in the first 30 seconds, you know, you're in trouble. And, you know, you'll end up having a really hard gig. Often what happens as a public speaker is, you know, people are so well behaved. You know, no one shows their boredom. People don't start throwing cans at you. And perhaps they should. Perhaps they should raise the stakes a little. It's got to make the whole public speaking kind of area a lot more interesting when it becomes a lot more terrifying. For too long, people have put up with bores. So I think, yeah, comedy is the techniques. It doesn't mean you have to be uproariously funny, but the techniques help people be more direct, and they help, you know, it's all about connecting. It's all about finding connect points with your audience.
Yes.
And how to get there, and how to use techniques that comedians use to let the audience believe this illusion of relationships, so they think you're talking directly to them in that really natural, friend-like manner, when in fact you're not at all. It's ruthless. But no, it is. It the techniques, you know, just go across the board.
Very good. So we've covered a fair bit of territory, dementia, teaching people comedy, writing books. There's a lot that you could talk about at TEDx, but for people coming along, what can they expect to hear from you?
I want to talk about stand-up for dementia. It's something I've only just started piloting, and it's really exciting. We've had a study that's been done on the work I'm doing, and because it was a complete accident, you know, doing the work with people with dementia, and everyone always thinks I'm performing with people with dementia. Everyone says the same joke. They go, oh, that's good. You can tell them the same joke. Hardy ha ha. Which is, you know, kind of, I went, you believe every person said that virtually. And I go, well, actually, I'm not performing for them. I'm actually supporting them to perform comedy, you know, for each other, which is completely different. So I really want to talk about, you know, how comedy can be used in a therapeutic manner to get people to engage with each other and to almost tap back into, you know, some skills and some memories that people, you know, still have, and actually gives people really high levels of competency and confidence. As, you know, it's never going to, you know, of course it doesn't, you know, cure someone's dementia, but it's a really appropriate, fun, and quite amazing activity as it's turning out. So, and I don't think anyone else really, there's a few places around the world doing something similar-ish, but I don't think anyone's quite doing what I've been doing. So I'd really like to talk about, you know, what's happening with that and see it used across the board as a therapy for people, you know, with dementia, because there's not that many things, you know, that you can do with a group of people that have, you know, dementia as an illness.
Yeah, I guess, you know, the overwhelming response to dementia is to make people as comfortable as possible and try and keep them safe. But it's really wonderful to bring a bit of joy into people's lives.
Well, yeah, because, you know, the whole thing is people are in the moment. That's where they live.
Yes.
So it's really engaging because you can't, there is no past, and they have no, it's like there's no concept of the past, and there's no real concept of what's happening tomorrow. It's just right now. And once I got onto that as a facilitator, it completely changed the way I worked. I was trying to work with that particular group in the way I work with everybody else. And sometimes you've got to throw all your tools out the window and start from scratch. And that is, as a facilitator who's very comfortable in the way I teach, you're not prepared to do that. And I realized unless I was prepared to burn everything, I wouldn't be able, there'd be no results. And as soon as I did that, I had a result and went, oh, you know, it was worth taking the risk. You know, because as a facilitator, sometimes when things aren't going your way, it's terrifying.
Yes.
You know, you can really lose face. And so the whole program I've developed has come from me having to throw caution to the wind and just make things up on the spot and then go home, look at why they worked and go back out again and try it and modify it and work specifically to that group and change it again, to the point now where I've developed a bit of a format that I could teach another facilitator so they could go in and run a program with a group. So that's where I'm wanting to get. You know, there's no point, it's just me that can do it, but developing a bit of a package and a formula and a way of working that gives people positive, fun, engaging experiences.
Wow. Well, that's certainly a worthy aim.
Mandy, I know.
We've got to keep this interview short, I'm afraid. There's a lot more we could talk about, but as we're going to be having guests coming to Byron Bay, do you have any final words of advice for fitting in with the Byron Bay experience?
Oh, I'd say let yourself go. Go with it. Keep your eyes open. Keep your eyes and your heart open. I think that's part of the Byron Bay experience. I think you have to look a little deeper these days too. I think, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, the Byron Bay experience was fairly evident as soon as you came here, but I think it's a little bit more underground these days, so you have to look a little more carefully, you know, to be part of it. I'd say always do the lighthouse walk, see a few whales, you know, do a yoga class, you know, if you can't get a coffee every 10 metres, then you're not actually in Byron Bay, you know, dance in the park, you know, if there's not somewhere where you can dance loudly. Dance at the markets, that's hysterical. Yeah. It is. Let yourself go. You can be someone else for the weekend. It's quite liberating.
That sounds wonderful. Well, Mandy, thank you very much for your time, and we'll see you at TEDx Byron Bay.
Thanks, Dan. Looking forward to it.
And that's Mandy Nolan. You can see why she's a community treasure, someone who is known and loved by many. Now, Mandy is going to be speaking at the TEDx Byron Bay conference. So our other podcast guests. As you can see, it's a fantastic lineup. This is just a selection. We haven't managed to speak to everybody yet. If you're interested in attending, there may be a spot or two left. I'm not making any promises there. I know it's getting tight, but you may be able to squeeze in. If you are interested in coming, you could find out more at the TEDx Byron Bay website, which is just TEDxByronBay, all one word, .com. Now, wherever you're listening to this podcast, there'll be an opportunity to subscribe. You can subscribe to the blog. You can subscribe to our podcast posters. You could like our Facebook page and you'd get all of the podcasts. Or you could subscribe in iTunes. That's a great way to do it. And that way you can take the podcast with you. You can listen to them on your iPod, listen to them on your phone, listen to them on your computer, whatever suits. Whatever way makes sense to you, I'd invite you to subscribe because we've got more content coming your way, not to mention what we're going to be sharing after the conference is over. So please go ahead and subscribe. And until the next Byron Bay TEDx podcast, have a great day. And remember, ideas become things that shape the world.